Chapter 69, Martin Luther, Part 4, The Break with Rome. Pope Leo X sits in his palace at Rome, staring gloomily before him. The reports which come to him from Germany alarm him. It is not going well there. There it is going in the wrong direction. At first, he laughed at that monkish quarrel. He had thought, that won't get very far. But to his great terror, he perceives more clearly that he has been sadly mistaken. Entire Germany has become disturbed, and it did not stop there. Also, in other countries of Europe, the writings of Luther are being eagerly read. And they find response in the hearts of the nations, because that same thing existed long already with the people. Leo X was not aware that it was not a common monkish quarrel, but that the Lord was busy to deliver his church out of the power of Rome. He perceives that this quarrel is becoming very dangerous to him. It becomes an avalanche, which is not to be stopped. When the Lord works, who shall turn it back? For that reason he sits there staring so gloomily before him, because he can no longer behold that silently. He is uneasy, yea, worse, the terror creeps into his heart. What will be the end of it? A stop must be put to that. That monk from Wittenberg must retract that which he has written. Yea, of course, retract. Then the storm shall soon be past. That is the only means to restore peace. But if now that monk will not retract? What if he stubbornly adheres to that which he wrote? What then? Yea, then? He shakes his head to dispel those dismal thoughts. Ah, what, not be willing? He must, he shall retract. Some time later, Luther receives a letter from the Pope, in which he is commanded to retract his writings. Does Luther become alarmed? Does he yield to the Pope? No thought of that. He refuses to obey him. He does write a polite and respectful letter to the Pope. He thinks that the Pope has been instigated by his enemies. He supposes that Leo X is not well informed. For that reason, he writes that letter, because he still has far too much confidence in Leo X. The Pope is not so bad. How mistaken he is! Very soon after that comes the answer from Rome. Within 60 days, Luther must appear before the Pope at Rome to answer for himself. Luther realizes from this that it is becoming serious. Go to Rome? No, he will not do that. He knows better. Also, his friends advise him seriously not to travel to Rome. They point him to John Huss, who also traveled with confidence to Constance, but who never came back. Luther realizes that the same fate awaits him. For that reason, he firmly refuses to obey that papal command. Then the Pope demands from Frederick the Wise, the Elector of Saxony, that he shall extradite Luther. That means Frederick the Wise must have Luther arrested and have him brought to Rome. It is good for Luther that the elector refuses to do that. Also in this we see the hand of the Lord, who protected Luther. He inclines the hearts of kings and princes to whatever it pleases him. Luther even obtained a powerful friend and protector in that elector. All attempts of Rome to get Luther in their hands failed. The Pope answers, "Very well then, I will permit Luther to answer for himself in Germany." Frederick the Wise smiles subtly when he hears that. That is just his intention. It could not be better. It is arranged that Martin Luther shall travel to the city of Augsburg. Cardinal Cajetan shall also be present. Luther has to answer for himself before him. Now, Brother Martin does not refuse, but goes. On the 7th of October, 1518, he arrives at Augsburg, where he is cordially received by the monks of the monastery where he shall lodge. The cardinal has also arrived in the city already. In the evening, Cardinal Cajetan sends a servant to Luther asking him if he will just retract. You can realize that Luther will not go into that. Then he must appear personally before the cardinal. Cajetan receives him kindly. He says persuasively to Luther, "Come, just retract quickly all that you have written. Then you are rid of everything. Man, don't be foolish. What do you get out of all that trouble? And the interest of the Roman Catholic Church is at stake." But Luther did not come for that. He wants to defend his theses. He purposely came to Augsburg to speak with Cajetan about that. However, the cardinal does not like that very much. What does this monk think? He has to obey, and that is final. When he finally does get into conversation with Luther, then it soon appears that he cannot hold his own against Luther. That monk from Wittenberg is at home in the Bible, and that cannot be said of Cajetan. Afterwards, Luther has said mockingly, "Cajetan knows as much about the Bible as a donkey does about playing a harp." When that dignified cardinal notices that he cannot get the better of him, then he becomes angry, and he commences to revile and threaten. He demands, short and concisely, Luther must retract. And yea, Luther will not do that, or he must be convinced upon the basis of God's word that he is wrong, that he has erred. The cardinal becomes ever more angry. Repeatedly, Luther must come to him, but always without any result. Finally, the cardinal sends him away with these words, "Get out of my sight, and do not return except you want to retract." Luther goes away, and Cajetan follows the courageous monk with eyes that flash with intense hatred. Then he grins falsely. He shall humble that little monk, because he is not going to let that Wittenberg monk depart peacefully. Oh no, he will cause Luther to be arrested in order to send him to Rome under a strong guard of soldiers. Indeed, the Pope had told him to do that. He was not allowed to let that Wittenberg monk escape. Naturally, Luther himself knows nothing about that. He shall unperceived be caught in the snare which is so cunningly laid for him. Oh, if that will only turn out well! It becomes very dangerous for Luther in Augsburg, and he is ignorant of that danger which threatens him. And then? The night has descended upon Augsburg. It is a dark night without moonlight. It is the night between the 20th and 21st of October, 1518. It is quiet in the street. All people in Augsburg are asleep. Perhaps Cardinal Cajetan is asleep too. But if he had known what was taking place outside, then he would not have slept so peacefully. Because? In the monastery where Luther is lodged, the door opens cautiously. A dark form steals outside. That form hastily shuffles onward, close to the houses as quietly as possible. There he already approaches the walls which surround Augsburg. One of the many city gates also opens very quietly. That dark form slips through the open gate and now finds himself outside the city. Immediately after that, the heavy gate is closed again. Who is that man? Ah, we understand it already, do we not? That man is Luther. He was warned by friends, and he flees. Friends assist him. Friendly hands open the doors for him. Friendly hands have taken care that a saddled horse stands ready outside the gate. Luther mounts that animal. First very quietly, so that it shall not be heard, then a little faster, and finally in a gallop, he moves away from the city. Hours on a stretch, he rides on without resting, further, ever further away from Augsburg. God watches over his servant. The crafty, devilish plan of the hypocritical Cardinal Cajetan to secretly abduct Luther to Rome shall not succeed. Oh, if had succeeded, then Luther had been lost. He would have never returned. He would have been murdered in Rome. But again, God watched. When finally the new day dawns, then Luther is already a remote distance from Augsburg. However, he is not accustomed to horseback riding, and this nocturnal ride is very tiresome to him. Yet he dares not rest very long on the way. He must try to reach Wittenberg as soon as possible. Before that, he is not safe. Luther himself realizes that very well, and therefore he hurries on restlessly. The power of Rome is so great. A few days later, he rides through the gates of Wittenberg. He has safely finished that tiresome journey. When Cajetan perceives that his prey has slipped from his grasp, his rage knows no bounds. He angrily stamps his feet, and his fists clench themselves convulsively. Escaped! Escaped after all! However, he does not lose courage as yet. That impudent monk shall return. He will not let the matter rest. Apparently friendly, but with a somber threatening, he requests the elector if he will see to it that Luther returns to Augsburg. But the elector does not think about that. He refuses politely, but decidedly. Disappointed and with rage in the heart, Cajetan travels back to Rome to bring the message to the Pope that his attempt to have Luther retract all that which he had wrote has failed completely, and besides, his prey escaped the last moment. And yet, thinks Pope Leo X, and yet the struggle in Germany must come to an end, because it is becoming ever worse and ever more dangerous for Rome. But yea, and that remains a great difficulty. How? If that miserable monk would only retract, then he was done. But Luther will not do that. Leo X also clenches his fists in powerless rage. The knocker falls heavily upon the monastery gate at Wittenberg. A dignified, important gentleman, and with a friendly face and a winning smile upon the lips, desires to speak to Dr. Martin Luther. He is admitted inside. Soon those two men sit talking familiarly with each other. Who is that friendly gentleman?
Oh, I can soon tell you. His name is von Miltitz, and he is chamberlain of the Pope. It is just him that is sent to Germany by the Pope, because he has an exceptionally pleasant and friendly character. He must try to settle the matter by mutual agreement. First, he had paid a visit to the Elector of Saxony, Frederick the Wise. He had tried to get approval from the Elector to secretly make Luther a prisoner. As a reward, Frederick the Wise would receive a ribbon of honor. That still happens today, is this not so? The President also distributes decorations to people who in one way or another have made themselves deserving. Well then, Frederick the Wise would receive such a high distinction if he gave his consent to make Luther harmless. But he would not receive that from a king or an emperor, but from the Pope. However, happily for Luther, the noble Elector refuses. He does not want to earn that Judas reward. Then von Miltitz looks up Luther to speak personally with him. He is very friendly and pleasant to Luther. Yea, he praises and flatters him. But, says von Miltitz, do us a favor and keep silent about it from now on. You can promise that, can you not? No, he does not demand that Luther must retract everything, but he must keep silent. Exactly. The devil tries that all the time if he cannot win it. If nothing succeeds, then they must keep silent about it. Luther, taken by surprise because of his friendliness, gives in. Well then, go ahead. From now on, he shall keep silent about it, yet under one condition. Then his enemies must keep silent too. Miltitz promises that. Luther can count on that, of course. From both sides, the matter shall no longer be discussed. Bowing and with a firm handshake, he takes a friendly leave. He has Tetzel locked up in a monastery so that an end comes to the abominable indulgence traffic. Ha! That was successful. Being satisfied, he travels back to Rome. His mission has not been in vain. But it was determined otherwise in God's eternal counsel. Luther was not allowed to be silent. The light of God's word was not allowed to be put under a bushel, but it had to shine in the darkness and spread its light everywhere. Just the enemies of Luther broke the silence, so that also Luther was no longer bound to his promise. Not Luther, but his opponents have broken the silence. Don't you also see running in this the golden thread of God's reign? He directs everything in such a way that it would all redound to the glory of his name. The name of the man who broke the silence was John Eck. He was an educated master. He was professor at a university in a German city. This professor had likewise read the theses of Luther. He also had become angry. He would soon straighten out that matter. He thought, "I shall prove to that monk from Wittenberg that he is altogether wrong." But he would not discuss that matter with Luther alone. Oh no, and then no one would hear it. He would publicly expose that monk to ridicule. He would put that monk to shame publicly. If then and there was no one who saw an opportunity for that, then he, Dr. John Eck, would do it. His name would be upon everyone's lips. He would be honored because of that. For that reason, he challenged Luther to a public debate.
Yea, now Luther no longer could nor dared to be silent, because otherwise the German people would begin to think that he was not sure of his case, and that he was afraid. For that reason, he accepted that challenge. It was agreed upon that the debate would be held in Leipzig. In the summer of the year 1519, both opponents travel to Leipzig. Luther does not travel alone, but various students accompany him. That was very pleasant for Luther. When finally the hour is there which has been agreed upon, a great multitude flocked together. The debate is begun under great tension. To tell everything about that? Oh no, that would become too extensive, and besides it is too difficult for us. I shall tell you something about it. There is not much said about the 95 theses of Luther, and that really was the object. John Eck has no desire to start about that, and that is really no wonder, because the facts are too clear. John Eck cannot deny them. For that reason, the Roman Catholic professor guides the debate toward other things. John Eck claims and defends with emphasis that the Pope is the vicar of Christ Church here upon earth. Luther answers that the Pope does not have that power, and he constantly appeals to the Bible, while John Eck constantly appeals to the various decisions of former councils and popes. At last Luther says, "Oh no, those decisions tell me nothing, because both the Pope and councils can err, which means that the ecclesiastical assemblies can also err. I hold myself alone to God's word, and that cannot err." John Eck had thought that he would soon close the mouth of that simple monk, but in that he was greatly mistaken. Luther knew the Bible thoroughly, but that could not be said of John Eck. Finally, Luther said, "John Huss, who was burned at Constance, was right. They have silenced him with death by fire, but that was wrong." When Eck heard that, a false smile curled his lips. Now he had Luther just where he wanted to have him. He cried out indignantly, "You are a heretic, and you must be burned, just like John Huss was burned." To be brief, we can say that Eck could not get the best of Luther. Finally, the debate in Leipzig was concluded. The many listeners went home, but the good seed had been sown by Luther, and in God's time, that seed would bear fruit. Eck traveled to Rome to the Pope. There he accused Luther as being a dangerous heretic who had to be done away with. He advised the Pope, "You must excommunicate Luther." And yea, the Pope listened to him. In 1520, the papal bull appeared. In that was demanded that Luther had to retract everything. Luther was commanded for the second time that within 60 days he had to appear at Rome, to the end that he must retract everything which he had written. If he did not do that, then the Pope would pronounce the excommunication upon him. And what answer did Luther give to that? Did he go to Rome? Why, no, he knew better than that, because he knew from the start that then he would not return alive from Rome. Did he then retract everything? He neither could nor was allowed to do that, because that which he had written was the full truth. Do you know what Luther answered?
Just come along with me, for then you shall be told.
Like most of the cities of those days, the city of Wittenberg was surrounded by a wall with gates. The name of one of those gates was Elster Gate. Well then, on Monday, December 10, 1520, a large multitude gathered just outside of the Elster Gate. There we see standing various professors from the university at Wittenberg. In addition, most of the students are present, while around them stands a large multitude. In the midst, a funeral pile has been erected.
Say, what is going on there? Shall Luther be burned, just like John Huss at Constance?
Oh no, this time no human being shall be burned. Various books, Roman Catholic books, are lying upon that funeral pile. We just told you that Luther had received a warrant from the Pope, in which he had been ordered to appear in Rome within the next 60 days. Those 60 days are now past. The 10th of December is the last day of the time fixed. On this last day, Luther shall give his answer to the papal letter of excommunication. That answer shall be very clear. Behold, there comes the brave monk already. With a serious expression upon his face, he approaches the funeral pile. In one of his hands he carries the letter of excommunication with the papal seal upon it. Becomes dead silent. One of the professors sets fire to the funeral pile. A cloud of smoke strikes into the faces of the bystanders. Soon the flames blaze up high. Then Luther steps solemnly to the front. He holds the papal letter of excommunication above the flames and exclaims, "Since thou hast vexed the Holy One of the Lord, may everlasting fire vex and consume thee." Then he releases the paper, which flutters downward. The next moment, it has been consumed to ashes by the flames. Calmly and dignified, he goes away again. Students and professors follow him. The multitude disperses itself and returns homeward, being deeply impressed by what has taken place here. Perhaps you shall think, is that now so exceptional, that here a piece of paper was burned? Yes, because that which Luther did here has been something tremendous. We must not lose sight of the time in which Luther lived. It is true, there was enough discussion about the sad state of affairs which prevailed. But that which Luther did here was an act, a public act. Here he severed all ties with Rome. It is no longer possible to return. Yet with this, the struggle was not finished. Oh no, now that just started. Courage was necessary to do such a thing, the courage of faith. Luther has done this deed by faith. Soon this act was known throughout all of Germany. The Pope also hears it. He is furious. How dares that audacious one do that? In 1521, Luther is excommunicated again, and the interdict is pronounced upon all that follow him. With John Huss, we already told you what that meant, did we not? That simple monk from Wittenberg brought entire Europe into commotion. Besides,
Luther wrote various little books which were read by thousands. In one of those writings, he called the Pope the Antichrist. At another place, God's enemy. Somewhere else, again, Christ's persecutor. And not to mention any more, the destroyer of Christianity. As you will notice, Luther was sharp, very sharp, but the Pope had only himself to blame for that. Yet Luther realized that a severe struggle was awaiting him. However, he did not shrink back from that. That struggle had to come, and it did come, bitter and fierce.